And the Lev knows that here is the beginning of its defeat. So therefore, we all experience this. The Taiva shouts and screams, you're stupid, and it's rubbish, and this is what life is. Suck the marrow out of life and enjoy what you're doing and live it up. Yeah. And the Beinoni says, no, let's wait. Reflection. Why do we have to act on impulse, as the Beinoni turns to the left? Let's act based upon reflection. Why do we have to be impulsive? Why can't we be reflective? What's going to happen? The Lev says, oh no, this is a hard case, and puts up a bigger fight. And the Beinoni introduces the Mayach. And the Mayach turns to the Beinoni and says, listen, you have two souls, but this is not really who you are. This is not what it's really all about. This is an unhealthy taiva that's coming from the behema perspective. And therefore, after you do it, you will regret it. It's not inherently consistent with you. It's not inherently consistent with truth. It's not consistent with the essence of reality. It's klipa. It's a shell. It's a concealment by definition. Why do I want it so much? The Beinoni asks. Because the Nefesh HaBahamas is very earthly, is very mundane, is very selfish, and you have that perception, you're not a tzaddik. And the Lev is shouting, come on! The Mayach says no. And when the Mayach says no, it's not actualized. I, the Lev, wants it. Mayach, shalit ala Lev betildase. So therefore, he has Mishalis Libay. He doesn't act upon it. He doesn't actualize it in his mouth, and even in his mind, the Machshava. That's the power. Mayach Shalat Alev over here doesn't mean not to feel the impulse. You feel the impulse. Not to allow that impulse, that craving, that desire to actualize itself in your behavior, in thought, in action, in words, and even in thought. What do we mean in thought? This just has to be clarified. A few lines earlier, the Alter Rebbe said he doesn't allow it to actualize itself. B'maisa dibro machshava mamish. What means machshava mamish? What about machshava plain? Plain machshava, he doesn't have a choice. In machshava itself, there has to be a distinction between machshava and machshava mamish. There are instinctive thoughts and there are conscious thoughts. There is a Hasidic saying, Machshava is der Spiegel von Herz. Thought, the thought process is the mirror of the heart, which means the brain is the central nervous system. Everything that occurs within us is processed and experienced through and in the brain. So the fact that you have a craving is immediately experienced in your thought. How does the Beinoni know he has a craving? He thinks. Because it expresses itself through his thought. That thought he doesn't have control upon. That element of thought, which is instinctive, which comes as an immediate result of the sensation, of the emotional sensation, that the Beinoni is not a master over. Just as you cannot demand from him to eradicate from himself the Nefesh HaBahamas, the very ability to experience this impulse, you also cannot demand from him not to think, not to possess these thoughts. These thoughts are a mirror of the heart. What means a mirror of the heart? The moment you experience this sensation, it's mirrored and reflected in your thought. No, not subconsciously, but not consciously, instinctively. Consciously in the sense that you feel it, but it's instinctive. It's a result of the very fact that you have this taiva. How do you know you have this taiva? You know that you have a taiva. Where do you know? Your brain is the only reality in you that you know. The brain is the one that experiences the taiva, that feels this taiva. What is that machshava? Dibur and maisa, that the Beinoni has full choice over. You don't have to talk about it. You don't have to do it. That machshava, we have to distinguish between instinctive thoughts and conscious thoughts. Where the Beinoni begins playing his unique role is in machshava mamash. Fine, you experienced an instinctive thought as a result of that taiva. Now what are you going to do with it? Are you going to ponder upon it? Are you going to meditate upon it? Are you going to continue that thought process? Or are you going to say, okay, stop. That the Beinoni doesn't do.
Would it be correct to say that when you're using the word instinctive, that's the analytic instinct in us?
When I'm using the word instinctive thoughts, I mean the animalistic instincts. In this sense, there are instinctive thoughts that come from the divine soul, but those are very healthy because they are consistent with the true essence of man's life, with the ultimate purpose of man's life, with the essence of existence. Those thoughts are healthy. I'm talking about instinctive thoughts that come from the shell husk reality in a person's life, the animalistic dimension. That means that a tzaddik has eliminated these unhealthy instincts? Absolutely yes. Versus the Beinoni. Once.
In other words, the Maya plays both ways. If the instincts have come from the Shama, which is, it takes to the next level. And on the other hand, the Maya can use it defensively. It puts down the reality is the truth is that the author doesn't necessarily have to use anything, which is much slow. I mean, the reality of using concepts doesn't apply to anything.
You're saying this doesn't necessarily deal with this issue. You can use this very concept for all areas of life. For example, if someone wants to smoke, 100%. And we'll see in a moment that Alter Rebbe is going to address using this very concept concerning all issues in man's life. Mamash in the next line, yeah? You say, you're questioning, okay, it's a good question. You're saying that I'm saying that the Beinoni experiences thoughts which reflect this taiva, and then he pushes out these thoughts. And you're saying that from the conclusion of chapter 12, it seems that he never experiences these thoughts. In the conclusion of chapter 12, what you're quoting doesn't say he doesn't experience this, the thoughts. Eina mekablam biratzain, willingly, willfully, consciously. It comes in. How do you know that you have a taiva? Not through your thought. How do you know you have a taiva? Everything is accessed through and in the brain. Huh? The imagery of that impulse, for example. The very notion of that impulse is accessed in and through the brain. The Alter Rebbe is saying the next step. Now what happens? The Ratzon. Now take it a step further. That doesn't exist by the brain. Why? Because the Mayach says no. Okay, let's learn another little piece and then we'll conclude. It's important to learn. The Alter Rebbe adds over here a very important statement. It's not just, oh, the words la'siach taite, it's not just the mayach shal tal alev not to allow the heart's desires to be implemented in one's thought, speech, or action. Furthermore, the mayach dominates the heart in the sense that it allows him to divert his attention from it. It's not just the mayach rules the heart in the sense you want this, and therefore you're thinking about it, but you don't do it. You don't meditate upon it. No, the mayach could go further and dictate a person's life to the extent to allow him to divert his attention from this taiva. Ela hepech legamri, to something opposite totally. So when you experience that taiva, and you're totally taken over by it, the mayach doesn't only dominate the person's life, the person's heart, and can allow, and can secure, can create a mental fortress, and can secure that won't be implemented in your life. The mayach can tell you, okay, stop thinking about it, and can take your mind and shift it to a whole new dimension, a whole new reality, something that's totally opposite of that taiva. You can get rid of that craving, but you can control what you're going to think about. And Alter Rebbe continues that this is true about all areas of life. Ubefrat al tzad hakdusha. It's true particularly in the direction of holiness. And this is what your statement before concerning smoking, this is what he's trying to say. This concept of mayach shal tal alev applies to every area in life. Whenever there's a struggle between mayach and lev, the Alter Rebbe is telling you, listen, you are not forced to fall prey to your lev. And that's why we see taka. When a person is taken over by that taiva, yeah? And in the beginning, the taiva says, if you don't do this, you're destroying your freedom, your happiness. When the person introduces the mayach, so in the first few moments, it's very difficult. But then when that taiva slowly dissipates and is gone, the person feels much, much happier. Much happier than if he would have fallen prey to the taiva. Much happier. He doesn't feel maybe that external happiness and freedom. But there's something deep that resonates. He feels at peace with himself. He knows he did the right thing. When we do the right thing and we prevent ourselves from doing something negative, at the moment the taiva is screaming, you're not enjoying yourself. But in the deep run of things, even an hour later, the person has a wholesomeness in his life. And that's a much deeper freedom and happiness. Because b'teva tildasa me'echshal t'lalev. So this is in all areas. It deals with smoking. It deals with if someone has to go through, God forbid, a surgery. And his impulse says no. But his mayach says the right thing is yes. So we actually often act upon this mayach shalat lalev in many different areas. We implement it in our life. But Alter Rebbe says, b'frat al tzant ha-kedusha. The mayach has the ability to dictate, to dominate the lev, and prevent it from actualizing itself, and furthermore, diverting your attention from the taiva in every direction, especially when it's in the direction of holiness. Kediksev, as it says in Kehelas, Perik Beis Pasuk Yud Gimel. V'ra'isi sheyesh yisrin l'chachma min ha'sichlus ki yisrin na'er min ha'cheshech. Shleima HaMelech, the wisest person of all men, says, then I saw that wisdom surpasses folly as light surpasses darkness. You hear Shleima HaMelech's chiddush, and everyone asks the question, this is what you need King Solomon for, to tell us that wisdom surpasses shtus, surpasses nonsense, stupidity, rubbishness, as light surpasses darkness. That's question A. Question B is usually you give a metaphor when the concept is misunderstood, so you give a metaphor of something simpler. So what is so difficult to understand that wisdom surpasses folly, that Shleima HaMelech has to give us an example? Listen, it's just like light surpasses darkness. So the Alter Rebbe explains this pasuk thus. Chachma and Sichlus refers over here not to wisdom and folly in the ordinary meaning of the words, and as we usually refer to these words. Rather, in Kehelas, consistently, Chachma refers to holiness, to godliness, and Sichlus refers to negativity, to Ra. The Yetzer Tov is called a Chacham, the Yetzer Hara is called a Ksil, a fool. Does it mean the Yetzer Hara, the evil inclination, is really foolish? Sometimes very smart, very wise. But ultimately, in the long run, it's foolish, it's wrong, it's untrue. It's building up a case of something that's ridiculous. That's from the Hashal reality. So Alter Rebbe, so Shleima HaMelech is telling us that there's an advantage to Chachma over Sichlus. Chachma and Sichlus means holiness and unholiness. And an advantage, surpassing, doesn't mean it surpasses it, it's better. Certainly it's better. It means it dominates it. It rules over it. Chachma rules over Sichlus means Kedusha essentially rules over Klippa. Just as light surpasses darkness means just as light rules darkness. The reason that's why he has to give a metaphor. The metaphor articulates to us and reveals that the meaning of not only Chachma is better than Sichlus, Chachma rules Sichlus, and this we see in light and darkness. Light is not just better than darkness, light rules darkness. That's one issue. And another issue Shleima HaMelech is telling us here, he's explaining to us the manner how it rules it. And this we also see in the metaphor. How light rules darkness. Let's see inside. Just another few lines. Pirush, this analogy means, just as light has superiority, power, and dominion over darkness, shlita, you see, yisrin means shlita, memshala. It has superiority over it. It rules it. It dominates it. And in what way does it rule it? Shema'at er gashmi deicha harbe min ha'cheshech. That a little physical light banishes a great deal of darkness. And furthermore, shenidcha mimenu me'elovu me'melu, which is displaced automatically and inevitably without any effort on the part of the light. Two things we see. First of all, little light dispels a lot of darkness. And second of all, in what way? It doesn't have to fight with the darkness. The darkness is banished automatically and inevitably. May love him a mele. Kach nitchem mele. Sichlus harbe shel klippe v'sitrachle shel b'chol lasmali. So is there driven away automatically much foolishness of the klippe and sitrachle of the animal soul located in the left part of the heart. K'may merazal, as indeed our sages say in Masichta Saita Dav Gimel, Elim k'nichnas beruach tuz v'chulu. The Gemara says that a man does not sin unless a spirit of folly enters him. So therefore, the element of man that produces the desire to sin is called sichlus ruach tuz. It's really folly that causes this human being. So this sichlus of klipa is driven away automatically, and a lot of it as a result, by the wisdom of the divine soul that is in the mind, which desires to rule alone over the city, and desires to pervade the entire body by means of its aforementioned three garments, Shemachshava, Dibur, Umaisa, Shatayag, Mitzvah, Satera, Kamal, which are the thought, speech, and action connected with the 613 mitzvahs of the Torah, as discussed above, what the ambition and the conviction of the Nefesh HaLikis is. What is the Alter Rebbe saying here? Gvaldik idea. Shlema HaMelech is saying a big chiddush here. There is light and there's darkness. Light is not only better than darkness. Light rules over darkness. What does it mean light rules over darkness? If you put them again in the ring and let them box it out, let them wrestle with each other, who will win? If you introduce light into a dark room, the darkness banishes. It's banished. And a little light dispels a lot of darkness. A, which means the quantity of light does not have to be commensurate with the quantity of darkness that it attempts to vanish. A little bit light is deich, banishes a lot of darkness. That's A. B, in what manner does it rid the darkness? Does it get rid of the darkness? It's displaced automatically and inevitably. Doesn't have to fight it. Fire and wind. There's a fight, and one can dominate the other one. This can be victorious, and this can be victorious. Iron chayshach. You ever saw you light a candle, and suddenly the chayshach is gone. It dissipates. Tranquil, peaceful. It's gone. Zach shleim hamelach. V'ra'isi. I saw that chachma and sichlus have the same relationship like iron chayshach. A, Chachma's Kedusha, Sichlus is Klippa. Why is Sichlus Klippa? Because its whole power is its glittering veneer. It doesn't have an inherent truth to it. It's a shell, it's a husk. So Chachma rules over Klippa, just as light rules over darkness. Which means a little Chachma can dispel a lot of Klippa, and naturally and inevitably. What does this mean? This means as follows. We call Chachma by definition a little, and Klippa we call a lot. Why? Why is this called small and this large? Why is this a little bit light and this a lot of darkness? So the answer for that is, because Klippa is much more imminent. It's closer to home. What do they say? I think the Shpoler Zayde was a colleague of the Alter Rebbe, once raised his hands to heaven and he said, Master of the Universe, if you would have taken all the pleasures of this world and placed them in a sefer called Reishis Chachma, which is a famous book of religious ethics. Reishis Chachma is one of the most fundamental svarim of Musa, written by a student of the Ramak, Rabbi Yehudi Vidash and Tzfas, the 16th century. It's a book of ethics, Musa, Kabbalah. If you would have taken the pleasures of Ilam Hazan, placed in Mereshis Chachma, and you would have taken the Gan Eden and Gehenim, paradise and hell that's discussed in Reishis Chachman placed it in front of our eyes, no, it wouldn't be such a problem. But the taivas, Elam Haza, the cravings of this world, you put right in front of our eyes. Gan Eden and Gehenna, Elam Haba, the whole future issue, you placed in Reishis Chachman. So what do you expect? This is in the books, and this is reality. Right? Yeah. And therefore, there's a whole Tanya to explain that it's real. This is reality, but it's a chiddush. It's a chiddush. It seems superimposed. Yeah, Yiddishkeit seems superimposed. That's why the Alter Rebbe wrote a Tanya that it shouldn't be superimposed. It should be karavilech. It should be part of who you are. Yiddishkeit shouldn't be alien to us. It shouldn't be secondary. It should be part of who we are. That's what Tanya is all about. So this is called Ma'at, and this is called Harbe. This is in front of our eyes. Ma'at and Harbi over here means qualitatively. So the Alter Rebbe says like this. When you have a mayach and you have a lev, the mayach controls the heart in any issue. It could be smoking. Actually, smoking can have some halachic implications, actually. The rabbis are busy debating in the last years if halachically it's permitted to smoke, not permitted to smoke. Whatever. Most, they say, of course, it's not permitted. But I was reading that some want to say it is. Whatever, it's another issue. It's anyway unhealthy to smoke, in any case. Whether permitted or not permitted. So, even over there, mayachshal t'lalev. Mayachshal. But Alter Rebbe, especially when it comes to Kedusha. When the lev desires something that's antithetical to Kedusha. And the lev really overpowers us. So then you bring your mayach into action. So the mayach has the ability to prevent the lev of actualizing itself, even in thought, and actually diverting your attention from what your lev wants. And he says the relationship between the mayach and the lev then will be exactly as the relationship between light and darkness. There is a special power in Kedusha over Klippa. When you bring in light into the domain of darkness, the light not only dominates the darkness, a little light banishes a lot of darkness, and naturally and inevitably, there is a special superiority and power that exists in Kedusha over Klippa. So therefore, when your lev gravitates to Klippa, as does the Bein in these lev, and your mayach introduces an element of Kedusha, the Alter Rebbe says in the ring, the power over here will not only be of the mayach and over lev, mind over matter, M&M, in the normal sense of things. There is rather a unique energy that exists, that is embedded in the dynamics of Kedusha that have the ability to vanish Klippa. So practically speaking, this means that when the lev gravitates towards something which is Klippa, you introduce your mayach, which has a Kedusha vision, which has a vision of Kedusha, and now there is a struggle between them. So the Alter Rebbe says, that little Kedusha, although it's Kedusha and it's little, it's alien, apparently, it will dispel the darkness. And in what manner? You don't have to battle it. And that's a very powerful statement, because you won't have to battle it. It will just dissipate. Which means, sometimes to light the match is a lot of effort. Over there, there's a lot of battle. But once the light is burning, the darkness is removed. To access our mayach takes a lot of work. There's a battle, because the lev screams, no, don't do it. But once you introduce the Kedusha element, the klippa dissipates. It's ridiculous. It's nonsense. We can see this afterwards. When we do fulfill our taiva, yeah, and we regret it 10 minutes later, yeah, okay, why did I have to do it? It was nothing. It was ridiculous, right? That's after you do it, because you see that it was taki ridiculous. Although tomorrow you do the same thing over again. That's how it is. But yeah. But if you can be wise and predict that, say, listen, you see that after you do it, it becomes suddenly meaningless. What happened to the whole aura, to the whole charisma, to the whole PR it had? It was nothing, yeah? It was a shtus. It was a veneer that was created, that was contrived out of nothingness, out of folliness. And then we're totally not in the mood of doing it anymore. If we can introduce that, so Dr. Eber says, introduce that afterwards notion before you do it. And it will dissipate. If you put yourself into that state of mind of Kedusha, in the beginning the taiva will scream, but once the mayach gets into place, it's like darkness. It's just gone. It dissipates. May love him and may as if it didn't exist. And that's the secret of the Beinoni. The Beinoni, despite the fact that he has a Nefesh HaBahamas, it never dictates his behavior. It's never actualized, because the Beinoni always remembers his Mayach, and since the Mayach Shal to the Lev, he never has to fall prey to the Lev. I just want to respond to two questions. You asked about someone who's mentally ill. Someone who's mentally ill, of course, this doesn't apply to. This doesn't apply to because the mayach is not functioning. This is also another human being, a human being who fried his brain. Today, through drugs and other means, a person can fry their brain, can kill their mayach, and then they're also totally not in control of what they do, what they're doing. Can we blame the human being for that? Now we can't blame him anymore for whatever he does, but we could blame him for bringing himself to a situation where his mayach is not functioning anymore. Concerning to another question that was brought up, if we all anyway act upon this dictum of mayach shalat lalav when it comes, for example, to going through surgery or something else we need, which is painful and we don't want to do it, but we listen to our mayach, so why, when it comes to issues of Yiddishkeit, is that not the case? And this person asked, he's not here, what about a Jew who doesn't even know about this whole thing? So this is, of course, the whole issue. Mayach shal tal alev means there's two issues that are needed that should happen. One, you have to understand that the taiva is unhealthy. If you don't think the taiva is unhealthy, so your mayach also agrees to do it. That's A. B, even if you understand that it's unhealthy, you have to put up a fight. You can't put your mayach to sleep. You have to go into the ring and say, I don't want to do it. Then you'll win. We are usually missing either both or one of these two components. Sometimes we have a taiva, we know it's wrong, but I'm not going to put up a fight. Of course the lev will win. Your mayach is sleeping. Get your mayach into the boxing ring and you'll see he'll win. Decide, I'm not going to do it. Dr. Rebbe says, why did he say your mayach has to produce a ratzain? It can't be an abstract mathematical truth. A, it's not good to smoke. Thank you very much. Bertrand Russell was once asked, he taught ethics and mathematics. So a student once asked, you act in ways that are contrary to the ethics you're teaching. How do you do it? So he says, I also teach mathematics. Does it mean that I'm a triangle or I'm a circle? So I teach it. Yeah, that's not enough. Ritzaynei shebemeicha, your mayach has to produce a ratzayin. I understand, hypothetically, it's unhealthy. Of course the lev is going to win. That doesn't mean mayach shal to a lev. Get into the ring. Start wrestling your lev. Then you'll see who will win. That's A. But point B, your mayach has to have a conviction that it's wrong. So our problem is that we don't sometimes feel that Yiddishkeit is important. Our mayach doesn't feel it's important. That's another issue of the Beinoni. Not just enough, when your lev wants something, your mayach comes and fights it. But your mayach has to have the right hashkafas. If your mayach doesn't feel that something is important, so why not go ahead and do this taiva? So that's, of course, another element that's crystal clear in the life of the Beinoni. By the Beinoni, it's absolutely clear that the blueprint that the Creator designed, Torah and Mitzvahs, is the ultimate truth of existence and is the most healthy and right way to live. So in the Mayach, that is crystal clear. So therefore, although the Lev experiences another type of impulse, the fact that the Mayach has this conviction that it's unhealthy to actualize that impulse, and B, that Mayach produces a Ratzayin, and the Beinoni is ready to fight for what that Mayach believes in, it happens that the Beinoni is that ordinary man who actually never sins. Have a good day and a wonderful week. Next week there will be a Shir on Sunday.
Rabbi Jacobson delivers this weekly class on the Tanya each Sunday morning at Heichal Menachem in the Borough Park section of Brooklyn, New York. To order additional tapes or to receive the tapes weekly by mail, please call Heichal Menachem at 718-633-1076.